there. Welcome to Shoot the Flick. I'm Frankie Sparks.
And I'm Scott Eisenberg.
And we are a married couple who like to shoot the shit about movies.
That we do.
And this week, we are celebrating the soon-to-be beginning of baseball season, right?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Scott showed me a baseball movie.
I did.
It's one that is super popular and well-liked. It even is in the National Film Registry.
I showed Frankie the baseball classic, Field of Dreams.
Released in 1989.
Field of Dreams is one of the classic sports movies, as much as it is about baseball.
It's a Daddy Issues the movie.
That is true. I knew Frankie wasn't going to be thrilled with the movie.
Now, that's funny you say that. Why did you think beforehand that I wasn't going to like it?
A, you don't like sports movies.
That's not true. I like Major League. I like A League of Their Own. I like Space Jam. You know? I like, but going back to baseball, like Angels in the Outfield, solid movie. I like baseball stuff. I've seen baseball. I've been to baseball games. I just don't like this movie. I don't hate it, but I didn't love it like probably most of the universe does.
You called it you called Field of Dreams Daddy Issues the movie. Yeah, but it's kind of real in that way. Like, baseball is the tangential. Yeah,
okay, but the premise of the movie is not real in any stretch of the imagination. There are so many ways in which the premise of this movie is ridiculous. Like, the Daddy Issues thing, that's based in reality. But the premise of the movie and the choices that are made in the movie are not real. They are not based in reality. They are based on what I would assume at this point. There are a lot of theories. But I think at this point it was some sort of brain parasite that infected Kevin Costner and then spread itself to the other characters. And that's what caused a lot of the choices to be made in this movie.
It's one of those things with a movie where nothing's explained. And that's kind of the point. You don't really need the mystery explained.
I do. I need it explained.
But see, that's the thing. If you explain the mystery, the movie becomes a lot less interesting.
And if you build it, they will come.
They will come. So it's one of those movies that, like, I personally connect with differently as time has gone on. It's interesting because now I'm coming to Kevin Costner's age in the movie, and now I'm, like, seeing a little more of him. And I'm like, will I ever eventually be his father in the movie? I don't know. It's a weird kind of movie like that, but it is arguably one of the most well-renowned baseball movies to exist to this date.
So also, as you guys would know, if you've listened to our show before, I think last year we covered another baseball movie starring Kevin Costner that also came out literally the year before this one, Bull Durham, which I think I liked that more than I liked this, which is weird, but I didn't love that movie either. I picked that shit apart too, but that at least had like Susan Sarandon in it, and
you just don't like Kevin Costner.
I don't like Kevin Costner, but I liked him a little more in Bull Durham than this. Well, I don't even know. I don't think my problem is necessarily with Kevin Costner in this. Because the character that he has been asked to play, he played it well. You know, he was playing a guy who I thought perhaps had some sort of mental break brought on by a midlife crisis, which seems to be at least part of the problem here, is that he's having a midlife crisis and doesn't want to end up like his father. And like, that is a normal feeling for a person to have. What I have a problem with is the lengths to which you go to fix your midlife crisis is, like, unhinged, quite frankly. It's a little scary, but we'll get into all that. What I was going to say is, before they went with Kevin Costner, they asked Tom Hanks to do it, and he turned it down for whatever reason. But I can understand why that is, because, again, the premise of the movie is so fucking insane that you need someone who's very, very charming and likable to get you to buy into the bullshit. And to give Kevin Costner credit, I think he did that with a lot of people. Maybe if I had grown up with this movie like Scott did, I'd feel differently. But that's kind of like the name of the game when we do the show, right? It's like one of us introduces the other one to something that they love, and then they give a more objective perspective.
When you compare this to Bull Durham, Crash Davis is a much more funny character.
Yeah.
He's energetic. He's,
yeah,
you know, he's at the end of his baseball career, while Ray Kinsella is
funny in another way.
This is much more of kind of a drama than Bull Durham is.
Yes. And I get what you're saying about not needing an explanation, because it's all about the feels. The feels, not reels. I got it. Like, I understand. And I'm the last person that's going to be like, well, that's stupid because it doesn't have an explanation. It's stupid for other reasons. But that the fact that there's no explanation, because the whole thing is like in the beginning, Kevin Costner hears this voice, right? And throughout the whole movie, he hears this voice telling him to do things and giving him cryptic messages for this like fucking crusade that he's going on. And like, yes, I'm going to make jokes throughout this entire show about how he's just hearing shit in his head and he's fucking crazy, which, I mean, I'm not ruling that out, but I know what they were trying to do here. It just didn't work for me, because it was so unhinged and made so little sense.
I think at this time, when you get Bull Durham, you get Feel the Dreams, you get Dances with Wolves,
which was 2 years after this and got him a couple of Oscars.
Yeah. Like, Kevin Costner is just starting to become famous. He's still kind of a little bit of an everyman where you're like, oh, I can buy Kevin Costner in these roles.
Right. I would say that, like, up till this point, like, at this point, he's still, like, run-of-the-mill movie guy until we hit Dances with Wolves and he's taken, like, more seriously.
And then once Dances with Wolves happen, and this is what I talk about with his career, is I think Kevin Costner gets so full of himself.
Yeah.
That.
Sure.
We start to lose that.
Yeah. He's like the anti-Bradley Cooper. And I might have mentioned something. I don't know if it made it to the cut of the episode. But I did mention something. I'm almost positive comparing Bradley Cooper to Kevin Costner. And it's like, you know, I might not be a big Kevin Costner fan, but at least people respect him. You know, like the film community respects Kevin Costner, because even though he's bland as fuck and like obviously thinks he's very lofty, he at least has a couple Oscars to back that up. You know, he has some good movies in there. But I mean, I've never seen Dances with Wolves, and I know that's like 5 hours long. Not no, actually, it's, but like it's long as fuck.
It's
and, like,
long as fuck.
Who fucking knows if I'd be able to sit through that? I don't know. But yeah,
I've only seen Dances with Wolves once.
I've never seen it, and I don't have a great desire to watch it, because I find Kevin Costner to be bland as fuck. And we talked about this. We did The Bodyguard as well on our show, as well as Bull Durham. And while in Bull Durham, he has a little more personality because they gave him jokes, thank God. But like the first fucking line that is uttered in this movie is him, and it's voiceover, and it's the most bland, dead, lifeless fucking delivery. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. Here we go.
I don't know. The voiceover is fine by me.
He has a little more life in this, but I mean, the problem is he has too much life and he's wasting it. Just driving around the country looking for fucking ghosts. Like, literally ghosts. He's looking for ghosts while his whole family is drowning in debt.
John Mulaney did make fun of it at the Oscars this year.
Or what about that moment in Field of Dreams when we hear, if you build it, he will come. And then Costner does it. He builds a baseball field. Well, I guess he doesn't build it. He mows down corn, and then there is a field. And then he's like, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And the bank is like, you want to pay your mortgage? And he's like, nah, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball.
And it does have arguably one of the most famous lines in all of movie history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you build it, they will come. Oh, no, he will come. He will come. Who's he? Jesus. So I'm going to do preliminary fun facts in just a second. But I do want to ask you, because at some point while we were watching the movie, I said, okay, so this is God talking to him, obviously. And he's like, well, not necessarily. That's what you said. And I'm like, well, who the fuck else is it?
It's never explained, and that's the point. It's never explained.
It's kind of alluded to at the end that it was Shoeless Joe or, like, Kevin Costner's dad, perhaps. But it's never really explained. It's never been officially confirmed who even voiced the voice. So we don't know, and we don't need to know, I guess. But it's just very interesting, because who the fuck else could it be? And if it is God, my point immediately was like, doesn't he have other things to do than get a bunch of old white guys together to play baseball? A bunch of old dead white guys.
Well, if you think about it logistically, everybody along this journey had a purpose to
fix Kevin Costner's daddy issues.
Well, not just to fix Kevin. Yes, Kevin Costner had a purpose that he had to fix his daddy issues, but if Kevin Costner doesn't go on this journey to fix his daddy issues, you know what would probably happen? His daughter falls off the bleachers and possibly dies.
We don't know that.
We don't.
We absolutely don't know that.
But because he goes on this journey.
Oh my God. Okay.
It all circles in on itself.
Give me a fucking break. I've seen enough movies, like sci-fi and shit, to know that, like, just the tiniest little, have you ever seen Butterfly Effect? The tiniest little thing changes and all be different. You don't know that she still would have fell off the thing. Fucking James Earl Jones, God bless that he's in this movie, because like, he's like halfway saved the movie for me, man. He's so great. But even him, like, what is his just to like find out that the world isn't as shitty as you once thought and then immediately die afterwards and go into the void in the cornfield?
No, it's again,
like, his purpose is to help Kevin Costner fix his daddy issues.
Well, it's also,
even though him building that baseball field fucking financially destroyed his family.
Well, it will save his family in the end, because he's,
oh, right, because all a bunch of random people are just going to show up in Shittsville, Iowa to watch a bunch of dead guys play baseball.
For $20 a pop.
Which is, okay, the fact that we're going to fucking get there. I don't want to, okay, we're going to get to save that in your brain case where Scott just said, oh, yeah, they're going to charge people $20 a pop to go see the, just save that for now, because that's not till the end, and I'm going to rant. Okay, preliminary fun facts. Ready? I'm so ready. Let's fucking do this. Okay, so this movie was written and directed by a guy named Phil Alden Robinson. I don't know him from literally anything else, but I did some research and found that he also wrote movies such as Rhinestone, you know, where Rocky is jamming it up with country diva superstar Dolly Parton. And Ghost Dad. He wrote Ghost Dad too, Scott, under a pseudonym.
Yeah, well, I think he also...
Ghost Dad?
Well, I also think he wrote Sneakers, which is like his other...
He did write Sneakers, which I've seen, and it's not really, it's whatever.
But it's his other claim to fame besides Field of
Dreams.
That
is not a claim to fame. No one knows what fucking Sneakers is. Literally no one knows what Sneakers is. If you go up to a random person on the street and ask them what Sneakers is, they'll look down at their goddamn feet. They don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, it was based on the award-winning novel Shoeless Joe by W.P. Kinsella, which I've never read, and I don't plan on doing so. But what I feel is the most interesting aspect of the technical stuff with this movie is that it was composed by James Horner, who is an 8-time Oscar-nominated composer. The score of this movie is good, and it was nominated for an Oscar. It lost to Alan Menken because The Little Mermaid came out that same year. But it was a good score. Literally every time someone said the word baseball, they did this like cute little dreamy sting, like da 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 da. It's like, okay, I get you. I'm understanding what you're saying. He also won for Titanic almost 10 years later, which we also did a review of on this show. But what's even more kind of impressive is that he composed this movie. Also, he composed Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and the movie Glory all in the same year. And fun fact, Leonard Bernstein, ironically, was the first choice to do the score for this movie, but he was overbooked, so they had to move on. But this movie was nominated for 3 Oscars, score, along with adapted screenplay and best picture. Both the screenplay and best picture obviously lost to Driving Miss Daisy that year.
It's one of those movies that I think is a father-son kind of movie.
Sexist.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that it's a guy's movie. Just
you did before.
Well, I'm not saying women can't like the movie. I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying it. Go ahead. Say what you were saying.
It's like a father-son type of movie. It's like, when does a son become like his father? And I'm sure, again, like, mothers and daughters have their things, too.
True. So, Scott, you ready to get into the nitty-gritty?
Yeah, let's do this.
I'm scared.
So we start with our narration. Kevin Costner talks about his father, his family, meeting his wife. Him and his father never connected. His mother died when he was 3. And his father's hero is Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's important just because Shoeless Joe, if you don't know, was part of the crew now known as the Black Sox, but they were the White Sox in 1923.
It was the 1919
World Series.
And the only reason I know that is because the night before we watched Field of Dreams, I watched 8 Men Out because it was sitting on my Tubi. And I was like, oh, I might as well just watch it since we're, you know, I know Shoeless Joe's in this, so I might as well watch it. 8 Men Out was, like, actually not good. Like, I didn't. It was so bland and boring, but, like, I got some background into, like, what happened. So at least in that respect, it was good to watch it. Yeah. But yeah, this was better than 8 Men Out. I'll say that.
I'll agree with
that. And you said I'm not nice to the movie.
But yes, 8 Men Out, this, they're talking about how the White Sox threw the World Series in 1919. Kind of a big deal in baseball history. All 8 players who were, everyone was convinced were involved in it, were banned from baseball for the rest of their lives, including Shoeless Joe Jackson.
So Kevin Costner plays Ray Kinsella, and his father is a big baseball guy, and that was like the one major thing they always bonded over in Ray's childhood was baseball. And like Shoeless Joe was his hero, so that's how we are connected with baseball going in.
But they fight all the time, and eventually Ray decides, I'm going as far away from you, because his father lives in Brooklyn. He's like, I'm going to UC Berkeley in California. Which he does. He goes to UC Berkeley, meets his wife.
They're hippies.
And they end up moving to Iowa.
And they get a farm and they have a kid together. Very cute little girl.
And he never apologizes to his father for the last fight they had. And his father had never met his granddaughter. Ray says he is 36. He's about to start a farm and he has never done anything crazy in his life.
Midlife crisis. Just saying. Okay, continue. Voice time.
So we cut to a cornfield.
Well, his corn. They have a fucking field of corn, and the whole fucking farm is a big thing of corn. It's huge, it's vast, and it's filled with corn.
It is filled.
It's corn. A big lump of knobs.
Oh, God.
It's got the. I'm sorry, that's so old.
So. Ray hears a voice.
If you build it, he will come.
Ray has no idea what that means.
And he keeps hearing it.
And, yeah, he's probably going a little crazy.
The fact that he tells his wife, I'm hearing voices. I'm hearing a voice. This is what it's saying. And it's over and over and over again. And she's like, well, that's just silly. Like, never once does anyone think, let's go to the hospital and make sure you don't have a fucking brain tumor. Because you're hearing voices. Let's go make sure you don't have a chemical imbalance. Let's go make sure you don't, like, have schizophrenia. Let's go make sure that you're okay health-wise before we laugh this off like a little joke. Like, well, it's very strange.
Well, I think if you look at it this way, they're trying to paint it more not
it's so quirky.
It's quirky.
That's a problem. Because let's put it in our perspective, okay? Let's say I come home one day and I'm saying to you, I'm hearing a voice in my head and it's telling me I have to go and, like, I don't know, climb Mount Everest. And it keeps telling me I have to go. What would you say? No one's telling me to commit any violence. No voices are telling me to kill anybody or do anything to myself violent-wise. It's just a voice that keeps popping up in my head telling me, you have to go right now and climb Mount Everest. What would you say?
Well, it's okay.
You can do it, sweetie. Or would you be like, okay, something's wrong with you?
Well, yes. I would think something was wrong with you.
Right.
But again,
so go to the doctor. That's all I'm saying. There was a step missing from this movie, and that's taking him to the doctor. And then once the thing is cleared and there's no brain tumor and then he still has the voices, okay, fine. You can then maybe believe in a higher power. I'm just saying they skipped a step. That's all I'm saying. I don't think I'm wrong. I feel like that's a very critical step that was missing. But from the beginning, his wife, what's her name? Annie?
Yeah.
Okay. She's played by Amy Madigan, who was also in Uncle Buck the same year. Those are the only two movies I know her from. But there should have been a moment where she was like, okay, maybe something's wrong with you. But from the beginning, she's treating it like it's this funny thing that's happening. And it's not. It's not funny.
I know you haven't seen it, but Close Encounters is a similar thing where it's taking a lot more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think the point is we don't want you to feel bad for Ray.
I feel bad for Ray. I do, the whole movie. I'm like, this guy is fucking losing his mind.
I think the point is, like, he's making these crazy decisions when you think about them logistically, but we're not meant to think about them logistically.
I get it. I totally get that. I just feel like it would have given him a little more credence to, like, okay, this is a real supernatural, like, thing that's bigger than me if we had gone through the logical steps first and been like, okay, what's wrong with you? And I mean, it might very well be a nitpick, but I'm just saying for me, it was a big hurdle to overcome in this movie that no one thought for a second that this guy is crazy.
Well, people think he's crazy. Everybody in the town thinks he's
like,
crazy.
No one in his wife at no point was like, maybe you should see a doctor. But she just fully like jumps in the deep end on whatever the fuck he's saying. And it's like, I don't know if that's realistic.
But we do get a nice little moment where his daughter's watching Harvey.
Yeah, the movie Harvey, which I think is from the 60s, or no, in the 50s. But it's basically Jimmy Stewart plays a guy who has this delusion that there's a 6-foot-tall rabbit named Harvey following him around. And I've seen it. I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't even remember fully what the conclusion of the movie was. But it's just, obviously, it's comparing Harvey to what's happening here, which doesn't help with my theory that we should have taken him to a doctor. But it's fine. Whatever. I'll let it go for the next 5 minutes.
So, finally, the voice gives him a vision of a baseball field.
Yeah, really spoon-feeding him that message there, voice.
So, Ray builds a baseball field.
With, like, lights and everything. Like, just a lot of expenses for this baseball field,
now,
which are unnecessary, I think.
Yeah, probably. But nowadays,
they blew their whole savings.
Oh, they blew their whole savings.
God forbid this kid ever came down with some sort of illness that they had to put her in a hospital and, like, pay medical bills. They'd be fucked because they spent all their savings on this baseball field for a bunch of ghosts.
Yeah. Even Ray goes, I built something incredibly illogical. There is no logic to me building a baseball field.
But he says it with a big goofy smile on his face like it's normal. And it's like, no. This isn't like a whimsical thing that you're doing. Like, I maybe I'm just old and I'm bitter, but like, this isn't whimsical. You spent all of your money and you have a child and a home, and he leveled like half of his corn crop so they can't make any money farming because there's no corn.
I do want to talk about, though, that baseball now, they do a game every year at this field, because this field does exist.
Yes, the field does exist. I saw that, too, in my research.
And it's always fun watching the current baseball players come out of the cornfield onto the field.
We're going to talk about that whole thing when we get to, like, the dead guys coming back. The implications of where these guys came from to come here to the... because they didn't come from heaven. They did not come from heaven. Don't believe the fucking fake news. Because Ray Liotta asks if the baseball field is heaven. So that would imply that he did not come from heaven. Just saying. Where do they come from? Where do they go?
So a whole year passes after he builds this baseball field. But there is a...
Does it?
Yeah, a whole year passes.
How do you
in
know
the movie.
That?
Because Christmas happens, snow happens.
Oh, right, Christmas.
So
yeah,
we see
yeah,
the whole year passes.
So this movie is a Christmas movie is what you're saying?
No. Though we do get a montage when he builds the field. And it's funny because he's like, I didn't want to be my father. But he's doing the same thing his father did for his daughter. Like, he's sharing the story of baseball. And that's the one thing about baseball, is baseball is kind of a... As much as we love the sport, it's a sport that we pass down through generations to generations. That's kind of why it's America's pastime. So he's talking to his daughter about Shoeless Joe and all these stories and stories that he was probably brought up on.
Mm-hmm. And so abandon your family. Abandon your gods. And build a baseball field.
He didn't abandon his family.
He did! I'm sorry, babe. Continue with your... nonsense. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm done.
Okay. So finally, one night, he's sitting with his wife. They're going over the books, and he's
which are bad.
Which are bad,
bad books.
They're bad
because of the baseball field.
They are bad because of the baseball field.
Right. Okay. Just making sure we're giving the full story here.
Yes. And his daughter comes into the room and goes, "Hey, there's a dude out there."
Yeah, that's how she says it.
Pretty
like
much.
6-year-old kid. There's dude out there.
Pretty much. And he walks out, and it's Shoeless Joe Jackson, played by Ray Liotta.
Who did Goodfellas the year after this, which we also reviewed on the show. But there is one point where he's joking around with Ray, and he does, like, the laugh, like the Ray Liotta Goodfellas laugh, and I was like, ah, there it is. It was very funny.
Well, it's also funny because Ray Liotta is very much a New Yorker. I think Shoeless Joe is technically from the Carolinas. He's like Southern Midwestern, and like Ray Liotta is so New York for this.
Yeah, he doesn't bother trying to like really hide his New York accent, does he?
No, but he's talking to Ray, like he gets Ray to hit him some fly balls. But they have an interesting talk about baseball and how Shoeless Joe felt like when baseball was taken away from him, he lost part of himself.
Well, he said like he compared himself directly to an amputee, which for me was a little like, okay, but okay, Joe. But I, yeah, okay, cool. Baseball, big deal. Got it. I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's okay.
An amputee?
Again, I'm not saying, is it a little...
You know those guys that used to get their legs chopped off after the war? It's like, bro, are you serious?
Yes, it's a little crass of an analogy, but you...
It's a little much.
But you also have to determine that he is a man from the 1910s.
Got it. Yeah.
So he wouldn't, you know...
Yeah, he couldn't exactly, like, you know, game to pass the time. He couldn't, like, go on his Xbox and just, like, blow off some steam.
I do want to give Ray Liotta a little credit here because I think, from what I've heard, the script didn't tell him what to do and how to act like Shoeless Joe. He kind of made this character his own. So when he comes out onto the field and is, like, feeling the grass in his hands...
Yeah, well, that's... I thought that was good.
I'm giving him credit. I think that's...
Because he's a guy that comes from the void.
Well, he comes from the void.
Of blackness and nothingness. Because you gotta think about it this way. Wait, finish giving Ray Liotta your credit, and then I'll go into my theory about where they come from and where they go.
The sense of, like, wonder and, like, relief to be back on a baseball diamond. I find Ray Liotta's performance very believable.
Yes, I agree. Now, my theory, because again, he didn't come from heaven, okay? So either then came from what, like purgatory, hell? Hell seems a little much because he seems all too happy to go back, when and all the players do. They're like, okay, come on, let's go, guys. Like, they're not going back to hell. Like, no. So they're either like in purgatory or they're just in nothingness, I would assume. Because again, not in heaven. So where are they? So I proceeded to call the cornfield the void for the rest of the movie to Scott's delight. I was like, okay, back to the void, gentlemen. But yeah, they're just going into absolute nothingness until tomorrow. How do they know it's tomorrow? I don't know. There's an alarm clock in the void, perhaps. I don't know.
There's a lot of interesting theories about heaven and like hell and the void and...
what this movie actually fucking is.
Yeah, there's a lot of odd theories.
Strangely, I didn't find any online that just like chalked it up to him losing his mind, right? Like, no one was saying that. I think there was one that said he was dead the whole time.
Yes, there's
which seems less likely than he's just losing his mind.
No, I do wonder how many movies have that theory attached to it by someone.
Yeah,
there's many of them.
They're dead the whole time.
Like, The Sixth Sense ruined us
I
as
know,
a society.
That's true. Yeah, Sixth Sense. I mean, goddamn you, M. Night Shyamalan.
Everybody's dead now. It's all your fault.
We got to do that movie eventually, because you've never seen that.
No, I've never seen The Sixth
Sense. I've never seen Close Encounters, and you've never seen Sixth Sense. We're gonna have to, we have lots to cover. And then we find out, because Shoeless Joe meets the wife and daughter. He can't leave the baseball field, but the girls come out and say, hi, Shoeless Joe, so they see him. So there is a shared psychosis here, which at this point I was like, okay, so he's not just losing his mind. Perhaps there is a gas leak of some sort in this house that is fucking with everybody and giving them like a shared psychosis.
Which then I compared Frankie's theory to Community season 4.
Yes, the gas leak season. Yes, that's accurate. But yeah, no. That's my running theory at this point in the film, which is at some point debunked. But right now, I'm thinking gas leak.
Well, it's also funny because we do meet her brother, who...
Timothy Busfield!
Yes.
I love Timothy Busfield. Fucking West Wing, man. That's like not even for another decade, though. But right now, I'm just like, yay, Timothy Busfield's here.
Yeah, but he's kind of an asshole.
He's the villain, I guess. I don't know. I wouldn't call him a villain. He is kind of a dick. But to be fair, by his viewpoint, his sister's husband is just... He built this fucking baseball field to the detriment of their livelihood, so he could stare out at a empty baseball field and watch nobody play anything, and it's a little concerning. Like, I'm concerned, you know?
Yes, in the same breath, because he can't see it for whatever reason.
Well, I think the idea is that he's just like closed off to it, and he doesn't get it. He doesn't get the wonder.
If there's a ghost, he doesn't know who to call. oh, God. So finally, he hears the voice again. And the voice says, ease his pain. Whose pain? Again, we don't know.
This voice is intentionally vague as fuck.
He figures out it's Terrence Mann.
Well, the reason he figures it out, to be fair, is because he's actually decided to, like, at least pretend to be interested in what's going on in his own house. So he goes to a PTA meeting for his daughter with Annie, and like the whole time he's just doodling on a fucking newspaper. Like, he's not paying attention to anything that's going on. But apparently there's a issue at the school, because some parents, mainly this fucking Karen from hell, wants to ban a bunch of books like The Wizard of Oz and The Diary of Anne Frank. I saw that. I was like, oh my God, something's ever changed. We're talking about book banning now in schools, and we're talking about it in 1989.
But
we had like a Team Annie moment, and I was very excited by this.
Honestly, I don't think Annie gets enough credit for this
movie.
She
just eviscerates she's like a ride or die wife that to the level of which I don't even understand, and I consider myself a pretty ride or die wife.
Oh, I think she...
But, I mean, Jesus Christ. But like, just in this moment with the book banning scene, like, this fucking cunt of a fucking Karen is talking about banning all these books, including this book by a guy named Terrence Mann, who we'll talk about in a second. But this guy, Terrence Mann, was a big writer in the 60s. He was all about peace and love and all that shit, right? And Annie sticks up for him and sticks up for, you know, literature and shit. And she's like, you Nazi fucking cow. I wanted to, like, take up in arms with her and charge the Bastille. Like, I don't think that's right, but you know what I'm saying. I love her, and I was very excited. And her husband did not give a fuck about what she did. She, like, stood up to the fucking Karenarchy, and he didn't give a fuck. He's just like, oh, I know what I have to do. I have to go to the library all day and all night. Well, I should be farming. But I'm going to go to the library and look up information about Terrence Mann, because perhaps the voice is telling me I need to ease his pain, because he's been living in solitude for however fucking long, because the 60s sucked. And
well, his character is an interesting character in general, because when you have a belief that you believe so hard, and then the world just basically says, you know what, fuck you.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Right. Well,
and I think Terrence Mann is the father figure Ray, like, he's bitter. He's, because that's the way Ray describes his father, is bitter. He hates the world. And I think Terrence Mann's meant to be, like, the father figure for Ray to see here.
Yes, yes.
So that's, in Ray's mind, he's making Terrence Mann his father. The fact that he's James Earl Jones is, you know, just great because he's James Earl Jones. But...
Indeed, it is pretty great. But in the novel, the character of Ray actually was seeking out J.D. Salinger, who is a real-life author. Every kid who had to read Catcher in the Rye in school knows who J.D. Salinger is. But apparently when they got word that, like, they were going to make this book into a movie, J.D. Salinger came out and was like, yeah, don't do that. He came out with his lawyers like, don't put me in this movie. I'll fucking sue you. So they changed it up, made him a, you know, old black guy. So they're like, there's no way they could possibly say this is J.D. Salinger.
The actual author of the book, when they asked him for his rights to the movie, like, hey, can we make your book into a movie? We may need to change a few things. He sent them back a postcard and said, do what you want.
Literally, I don't care. Give me money.
Do what you want. You know, so he has to go find Terrence Mann.
He really doesn't, though. Let's fucking be real. He really fucking doesn't have to go find him because he doesn't even know that that's who he needs to go find, first of all. And even if it is, they haven't paid their mortgage, Scott, in months. But he's talking about going, he spends all day in the library looking up, trying to find where this guy is. And then he tells his wife, okay, I have to go on a road trip to find this guy. For why? I don't know. But I have to go find him because Jesus told me to. And Annie's fine with it. If she's a little hesitant at first, but then they start talking about how they had the same dream about Kevin Costner eating a fucking hot dog at some fucking baseball stadium
Fenway.
With Terrence Mann. And they're like, oh my God, I had the same dream. That's the gas leak talking, Kevin Costner. That's the gas leak. Don't go. Don't abandon your fucking family when you're about to lose your house. I'm sorry, like, the wispiness and the loftiness and the juju woo of the story is not, like, I'm not falling into, like, the trap of, oh, this is a journey that is bigger than me. No. For what? He's doing it for himself because he's like, this will fix my daddy issues. That's why he's doing it. Meanwhile, he's an actual daddy and, like, your child could be homeless. But let's go find Terrence Mann. Let's go find James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones is
so good.
Fucking amazing actor.
So good.
You buy the hurt he's going through.
He's just tired of this shit. He doesn't want to fucking be involved anymore because it didn't do shit for him. And now all he has is he's got, like, this isolated life. And once in a while he has fucking lunatics like Kevin Costner coming to him for, like, all the answers. How do we get peace and love back, man? And he's just like, fuck off. Leave me alone. Like, leave me alone.
And, you know, at one point, Kevin Costner does try to kidnap him.
Well, he does try to. He puts his little stubby-ass finger in his pocket. He's like, I have a gun. And James Earl Jones is like, no, you fucking don't.
That's your finger.
I literally thought he was going to pull out a shotgun and be like, this is a gun, bitch. Well, but he didn't.
He pulls out a crowbar and says, I'm going to beat you senseless.
But then he's like, listen, I want to take you to a baseball game. And James Earl Jones is like, okay. And then they just go. And I'm like, okay. So he really isn't that pressed. He wants to go. For all you know, he's going to, like, murder you and, like, drug you and put you in the trunk. Just, like, I don't know. You don't know. You don't know this person.
You don't. I think he just is like, okay, if I just let this guy play out his illusion of taking me to a baseball game, then I can go the fuck home.
But then the brain parasite, which is, this was the point where I thought, no, not gas leak, brain parasite. It decides to spread and infect fucking James Earl Jones.
Because they get to the baseball game, and Ray sees on the screen Archie Moonlight Graham, one played game, zero at bats. And Ray goes, well, I guess you didn't have to be here. Here, you can go home now. And as he's about to leave,
oh my God, this was fucking scary.
Terrence Mann stands in front of his car. And
he, like, turns around and the fucking headlights go on James Earl Jones. He's just like, I saw everything.
And basically he's like, I have no idea what this means, but let's go figure it out.
So then, obviously, Kevin Costner immediately calls his wife and lets her know what's going on and asks her, listen, honey, are you okay if I do this and continue on this pointless journey to... Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I'm fucking around. He just goes with fucking Terrence Mann and goes and fucks off and says, oh, don't worry about my wife.
He calls her.
In the middle of it while they're already going. He already made the decision to go. He didn't even call her and let her know what's going on. So now they're going on another road trip to go find some other ghost. Like, what the fuck? And then at one point they're in a hotel room and Kevin Costner's reading the paper. And he's like, oh, Terrence, did you know you were missing? And it's like, oh, my son reported me missing. I probably should call him and let him know I'm not dead. And then he goes to pick up the phone. He's like, oh, what would I say? And he hangs. I'm like, say you're alive. Say you're not dead in a hole somewhere.
Yeah, but in the same breath. In the same breath. It's like, hey, I'm going to Minnesota.
My God.
Like, why are you going to Minnesota?
Just say because I feel like it. I'm a grown man. I'm doing what I want. Okay, bye. And then Kevin Costner steps out of the hotel room because they find out that Archie Graham
is dead.
He was a doctor in this small town after his like kind of
almost touch with baseball.
Right. And then he leaves and he retires. He goes to this little town and becomes a doctor and he saves a shit ton of lives, you know, human lives that you can touch and feel and breathe and live. And then he dies like years ago. So they come to this town looking for this guy, Archie Graham, and he's fucking dead. So like, why are you here? And then Kevin Costner leaves the hotel room to give James Earl Jones a chance to call his son and let him know he's not dead. And they are transported back in time because that's a thing that we've established can happen now in this movie. They're just back in time in 1972 and he sees across the foggy street, there's this old man walking down the street with an umbrella and it's Archie Graham. It's Dr. Archie Graham. And he's played by Burt Lancaster. Now, Burt Lancaster is an Oscar-winning actor. He was 74 at the time of filming. This was his last feature film before his death in 91. But he is a well-known actor of like the, you know, that golden age of movies, From Here to Eternity, Sweet Smell of Success. That's a good movie. But he's like a legend, a living legend at this time. And he did a really good job. The fact that he wasn't nominated for a supporting actor award for this movie is kind of crazy to me.
Well, him and James Earl Jones both.
Well, yes, but I mean, James Earl Jones is still alive and kicking today. This guy was like at the end of his life.
Well, yeah, but both of them easily could have been nominated.
I agree, but yeah, like his performance in particular, I really, really appreciated. So yes, they go back in a fucking time warp, Kevin Costner, and he meets up with Archie Graham and they have a talk. And literally Archie Graham's like, yeah, like it was nice being in the major leagues for 5 minutes and like, you know, doing my thing or whatever. But like, I'm cool. I'm happy with the way my life turned out. Baseball isn't everything.
Well,
it would have been nice to have a longer career in baseball. But if I had, multiple people would be dead.
Well,
because I save lives.
Okay.
I'm cool with it.
Well,
bye bye now, Kevin Costner.
Well,
bye-bye.
Well,
and then that's the conversation.
Well, okay.
Which makes what happens after it really stupid. But go ahead, Scott. Tell me how wrong I am.
He talks about how he wishes, yes, he had the chance to at least have a bat. You know, that's his one thing that he never got. And maybe, you're right, maybe he wouldn't have become a doctor and saved all those people. And he's fine with where his life ended up. But his point is like, when he goes through this whole thing and we later meet his young self that somehow travels forward into the future.
Stupid. Anyway, continue.
It's confirming that, you know what? Even though I didn't get this, I'm okay.
It's a very fulfilling life.
Exactly. But it confirms that for his spirit.
So then why did we need young Archie to come back?
Because it takes away that doubt, that unresolved issue. Like, even...
But it's not unresolved, is my point.
But it is.
It's not.
It
he's happy with his life.
He's happy with his life. I'm not saying he can't be happy with his life, but sometimes, even if you're very happy with where your life was, or, you know, ended up, there's still doubts. There's still, like, oh, what if? And, you know what? Picking up him and having him play with the ghosts.
Just to say it. Okay, go.
Having him play with the ghost, it allows...
Because you're making a good point.
It allows him to resolve any...
Any what ifs.
Any what ifs. Any doubts that he maybe was left with at the end of his life.
Okay, fine. I still think it's bad. I think it undercuts the nice speech he had about how his nice life was good and why he loved his wife.
Well,
and
I think
he loved his job and saving people.
Well, yeah, but I think once he gets that little moment,
he's like, but I want to be a baseball star.
Well, everybody, again, I want to be a football star. I want to be. You know, everybody has it. Like, oh, what if I did this differently? Like, what if I took computer science instead of biology in college? Like, everybody has those. Because he has the choice at the end of the movie to again decide to stay with all the baseball players.
Or let a child die. You say that like it's a choice.
But it is a choice for him.
Psh.
And he decides he did the right thing all along, becoming a doctor.
But, like, it could have just been... him having that speech and almost kind of bringing Kevin Costner back to Jesus, like, hello, baseball isn't everything. You have problems with your daddy issues? Maybe go home and be a dad and you can fix it yourself. Just saying. That's the thing that I was getting through the whole movie. I'm like, you know, I understand you have daddy issues. Everybody's got issues with some parent in some respect. But, like, not everybody goes on a Jesus crusade to go ghost busting and make them play baseball together. It's, like, really not a priority when it comes to, like, your house is literally being foreclosed upon as you are talking to a dead guy. Priorities are skewed a little bit.
Well, again, it's also a movie.
I know. I understand. But I'm not falling into the movie magic of it. I'm not. I'm not falling for it, Scott.
So we fast forward.
Timothy Busfield literally is like, we're selling your house. You're going to be homeless. They all go back to Iowa.
Yes, they all go back to Iowa.
James Earl Jones and Kevin Costner go back to Iowa. They pick up a young Archie Graham, who, by the way, is played by Brett from fucking Pulp Fiction, which is funny to me. But yeah, so Timothy Busfield comes by. I still can't see any of the ghosts. There's this part where he walks literally through the baseball game to go up to them. The family, and he fucks up like somebody's pitch and they get pissed at him. It's really funny. But they're having this whole conversation while the baseball game's still going on in the background. Timothy Busfield is like, you have to sign this paper or they're gonna evict you from your house. I convinced the people, like, you know, to let you stay in the house, and we're gonna buy up the land and, you know, get rid of this fucking baseball field because it's pointless. You're not making any money off of it. Yeah. Huh? We'll get there. Hold on. So this is when the kid goes, the child. The little Karen, not bad Karen, like her actual name is Karen. Sorry. She goes, oh, but daddy, like, we could use the baseball field. People will come to the baseball field and we could charge the money to watch the baseball game. Yes. Now, mind you, Timothy Busfield at this point doesn't realize that there's a baseball game going on. But let's take the ghost out of it for a second. Okay. You build this baseball field. Huh? And no one thinks, let's advertise that we have this perfectly lovely working baseball field and try to get people in here to use it and, like, maybe get a little, like, mini league going, and we'll charge money so we can make money off of this fucking financial disaster that we've created for Kevin Costner has created for his family. No adults think of that throughout this entire fucking movie. But the little kid... it's just like, daddy, why don't we charge the people money? She doesn't have an accent. I'm just adding it for effect. But the point is, no one thought...
Daddy, can I have some more?
Excuse me, sir. But you know what I'm saying? No adult thought of that.
Again.
But the kid's like, yes, let's make money off the fucking baseball field.
And after this, James Earl Jones does give arguably what I think is the best speech of the whole movie.
Baseball has marked the time. This field This game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good. And it could be again.
Where it's pretty unhinged, but okay.
It is unhinged.
It's pretty unhinged, but it's like well delivered because it's James Earl Jones, but continue.
You buy into the whole thing of him speaking like, they'll come.
They won't know why they're coming. Just to get a glimpse of their childhood. And they'll da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh my God, okay. This is nuts.
Well, it's nuts, but he's proven right. But also, it's funny because... It's funny, though, ever since he comes out here, he's almost a different man since he's seen the ghost.
I actually like his struggle and his conclusion more than anybody else's, even Kevin Costner's, because he has this sort of defeatist attitude of, like, the world, you know, and, like, everything that he put into creating his art and trying to help with, like, this movement of peace and nonviolence and all this stuff, and there's still so much violence and anger and grossness in the world, right? And it makes you feel defeated. And like that's why he's shut himself in for so long, so on and so forth. And then you find out that there is this higher power out there. You know, there's definitely mystery to it, but like more exists in the world and there is some sort of greater being out there. Like that's an awesome realization for you to have that. Definitely, I would imagine, resolve some things within you if you're James Earl Jones's character. So I appreciated that.
Well, yeah, it gives him a sense of peace,
right? Which is why he so the kid falls off the thing, the kid falls off the bleachers that they built. They also built bleachers for this fucking baseball field, which we didn't really, if it's just for us, we don't need bleachers really. We just built that and wasted money for no reason, but okay. Also with the lights, same difference. It's fine, whatever, it's done now. Our house is being foreclosed. It's like it's neither here nor there. So the kid falls off the fucking bleachers and she is unresponsive. Her lips are blue. The mom goes, Annie, to the house to run and call for help. Kevin Costner's like, no, wait. Just wait. And I'm like, okay. Are we really going to wait, though? Like, But then we have this moment, and this is the moment in the movie that really like gave me goosebumps, where young Archie is like standing at the field and watching all this, and he runs to the edge and he slowly but surely steps over the field, and as he steps over, he turns into Burt Lancaster and he becomes Dr. Graham, and he like rushes over to the kid and he's like, oh, she's choking on this hot dog and let's just, you know, slap it out of her, and he saves her life. And she's okay, and he can't go back to the field. And, you know, Kevin Costner's like, oh, I'm so sorry. He's like, no, you gave me that thing, that one thing I needed. I appreciate it. And he's like, I gotta go back home because the missus will think I've got a girlfriend. And it's so cute. And then he, like, slowly walks through all the baseball players and goes into the cornfield, and he's gone. And it's like, whew, like... His performance of it is so good, and like it just gave me goosebumps. Well, really did. I'm like, God damn it, this movie affected me, even though I've been talking shit about it the whole time. God damn it.
Yeah, Burt Lancaster is a legend.
And he did fucking great he really did.
And for his limited time on screen, you buy every word he says.
Absolutely. It's always nice, like, because sometimes when actors and actresses have been around for a long time and you find out, oh, their last role was some like cameo in some piece of shit,
or you're in a ridiculous movie like Cocaine Bear,
right? Oh my god, fucking Ray Liotta, man, Jesus. Anyway, but like, yeah, like, you know what I mean, you hear stories like that and you're like, oh man, really, that was your last movie? This, I'm like happy for him that like this was his last movie, because even though I got issues with the movie, his performance in it was great, and like it was a really moving performance for like someone's last bow, you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's really nice. But then Timothy Busfield sees the ghost now because of what he witnessed, and he's like, oh god, don't sell this farm, Ray, this is gonna make us millions. And then Ray Liotta, you know, all the players go off into the cornfield, and Ray Liotta's like, hey, Terrence Mann, do you want to come with us? And I'm like, wait a minute. Is he coming back? Is he going to go and not come back? What the fuck? And I was like bugging out. I was like, wait, is he leaving? Is he coming back? What? Because, okay, also the implications of it, right? They build it up like this really sweet moment, and Kevin Costner's pissed. He's like, I built this field. I want to go into the cornfield, which is like, what, you want to die, dude? Like, what the fuck are you saying? But anyway, I know, Scott, you're going to tell me, well, he wasn't really thinking straight. He was just upset. Okay, whatever. The point is, James Earl Jones goes into the cornfield and, like, disappears, and he does it very masterfully. He does a great performance here, as he has the whole movie. But the implications of this are a little scary. Because, first of all, he is a corporeal human being, and he is walking off into the void, into the darkness, right? And we don't know what's beyond there, but that's besides the point. He is a human being with a body, and he goes out there. So, like, there's no body, right? Right, yeah. Right. So, like, your son is gonna think that Kevin Costner, like, murdered you and buried you in his cornfield because there's no body and you're just gonna disappear.
Theoretically, yes.
So
James Earl Jones was dead the whole time.
We're just gonna be okay with that? Like, okay, sure. And also, here's another weird thing, right? Because the movie ends and we're supposed to have this other, like, kind of, you know, heartbreaking, heartwarming scene where Kevin Costner meets his dad. Like, he's younger.
His dad before his dad became bitter and angry at the world.
Right. When his wife died and he got saddled with you, Kevin Costner. But anyway, so he meets his dad and he plays catch with his dad, and it's supposed to be really, it's like nice and all, but like the Burt Lancaster scene was better. Anyway, and even James Earl Jones' quote unquote death scene was better. Don't go into the void. Don't go into the void, James Earl Jones. But here's the thing. So over their shoulders while they're playing catch, we see like the highway, and it's a bunch of cars in the night driving towards seemingly Iowa. To, I guess, supposedly see this fucking baseball field. Like James Earl Jones was like saying earlier, he's like, oh, you know, they'll come, they won't know why they're here, but they'll be drawn to it like moths to a flame, blah, blah, blah. So are we just supposed to infer that the concept of ghosts is like a thing now that's going to be universally accepted throughout the entire, like, country and or world? Because a bunch of people coming to this baseball field and seeing ghosts playing baseball isn't going to stay in this enclosed, like, it's going to get out.
Yes, but only certain people will see it.
Right, okay, cool. So let's say, because once a group, like, you know, the brain parasite can only travel so far. So eventually people are all going to start believing this and see a bunch of dead people running
Hence,
around.
Hence Ghostbusters, Beetlejuice.
And we're just all going to accept that ghosts are a thing.
Yes.
In this universe.
Yes.
Okay. It just seems like the implications of the ending here are many and confusing.
Again, it's a movie. It's like, okay.
Yeah, no, I get it.
They're
going
to survive.
Right. No, I get it. It's a movie. Yeah. So, like, Timothy Busfield's going to go to his partners and be like, listen, guys, you're not going to believe this. This is a ghost baseball field, and we can't destroy it to make our money back.
Well, I think,
because ghosts play here on the baseball field.
Well, I think if you assume all these people who are now on this road coming, and they're clearly coming tonight, they'll be like, hey, here's whatever, here's $5,000. Calm the fuck down. You don't have to take our farm. So I think they'll back off with money being put in their hands.
Okay. Perhaps I'm picking it apart too much. I didn't fall as much into the, you know,
the Costner
the
hole.
Magic. No, I definitely can't. I can't deal with the Costner hole. I'm so done with the Costner hole, man. Jesus.
So this was Field of Dreams.
It was fine. It was okay. I'm probably never gonna watch this again. And if anyone mentions it to me, I'll just mercilessly make fun of it like I did throughout this episode. And I'll catch some fucking dirty looks, and that's fine. I don't care. Listen, I'm all about mushy gushy stuff. I mean, I'm a musical person, for God's sake. I understand we have to suspend disbelief. But, like, for me, this was too much suspension of disbelief.
a lot of people argue book first movie. I think a lot of people who have read the book and seen the movie, most people agree the movie's actually better than the book.
Hmm, interesting. Did he go to the doctor in the book? Did his wife say, babe, let's go to the doctor?
No, I think his wife was actually even more...
That's okay.
That's unhinged. Down with it. Like, hey, okay, cool. At least she has a little reservations through this movie. Not a lot, but a little.
Not a lot, yeah. I mean, outside of the Team Annie book banning scene where she calls that bitch a fucking Nazi cow, I was it was great. It was like one of the best moments of the movie. But yeah, she's unappreciated. She's unappreciated for the things she does for her family because fuckface is off chasing ghosts. And she's here fighting Nazi cows.
She is fighting Nazi cows.
And trying to save her house.
She is. So, Frankie, what would you rate Field of Dreams?
I gave it a 3 out of 5. And I gave it a 3 out of 5 because there were certain parts of the movie that I liked. Mainly Burt Lancaster, James Earl Jones, and the Nazi cow scene. I get what they were trying to do. I just fully didn't buy into it. I didn't fully buy into the magic of daddy issues and baseball. But, I mean, it was fine. It was better than 8 Men Out, which I didn't like. So I would say that I liked this fine. I just would never watch it again, probably.
Okay, that's fine. I knew you were going to be middling to not liking this movie anyway. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I love this movie. It's a nostalgic thing for me, too. It's one of those movies that I think does kind of encapsulate, like, again, the father-son dynamic, baseball. I don't know. It works for me on multiple levels. I think every character does a really good job. And at some point, I'll show our kid Field of Dreams. It's just how it goes.
Oh, no.
And then, Frankie, you will be forced to watch it again.
No, you can watch it with the kid. That's fine. And then when they ask you, Daddy, would you leave us to go chasing ghosts of baseball players? And you tell them, well, honey, it depends. It depends. Just did the voice of God tell me to do so? Was it a brain parasite?
But yes, Field of Dreams. If you haven't seen it, I would say you should.
If you like baseball and you have daddy issues, you'll probably appreciate it. I have daddy issues, but I don't like baseball.
Or Kevin Costner.
Or Kevin Costner, so it didn't hit me the same, I guess. But next week, I'll be showing Scott a movie. We'll be covering a director, writer that we have covered before. And we'll also have a special guest that we've had before.
Indeed.
So I'm excited about that. But until then, this has been Shoot the Flick. I'm Frankie Sparks.
And I'm Scott Eisenberg.
Make sure you check us out on Instagram and Twitter at Shoot the Flick. And check out all of our episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. And pretty much anywhere else you can find a podcast. And make sure you come back next week for our quirky, cutesy movie adventure.
Put me in, coach.
That's another movie.
I'm ready to play.
That's another movie.
That's a song.
No, I know, but it's today. From another movie. What movie? Put me in, coach. I know the song, goddammit. I think it was in Bull Durham. No, wrong Kevin Costner hole.
To play.
No.
Today.
No.